Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Hello, this is the Media Project. Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, who's usually in the seat, is on vacation this week.
Again?
I know, he has such a cushy job. But I'm Rosemary Armeo, professor and head of the journalism department at the University of Albany, and I will be filling in for him this week. And we hope to give you, as always, a little commentary, analysis, and even, if we're very lucky, some insight into the media issues of the week. Joining me on the program today, WAMC's CEO, professor emeritus, columnist, commentator, jack of all trades, Dr. Alan Shartok.
Hello.
And also with us this week is the editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick. Hello.
Hello. It's always good to be here.
Okay, so as in every discussion in American life today, we must begin, I think, with Donald Trump.
Absolutely. Now, there are people, Rosemary, who are going to tell us that we have no business giving him all of his publicity. And yet, whenever we do anything about Trump, the phones light up, people call, they call us names, they tell us we're good, as opposed to virtually anyone else.
He never ceases to amaze us with his antics, and that simply must be covered. So this week, let's get specific. He has banned, discredited, thrown out the Washington Post, and has said, no, they will not be welcome at his events in the future. If that were the Gazette that he had done that to, Judy, how would you have handled it?
You know, he in part did it to the Daily Gazette because we subscribe. The Washington Post is one of the syndicates we rely on for the coverage of our news. I was outraged when I first heard this because it's not so much the actual coverage. I don't think it's really going to hurt the Washington Post. I think they will be able to continue to cover Donald Trump's presidential campaign. It may make it inconvenient for them when he goes overseas. It may pose special challenges, but they are still going to cover this news. But what it does is it's the message it sends. It's a symbolic message that if you don't write what I like, I'm not going to deal with you. I mean, the press has dealt with this for generations, but this is a presidential candidate running for the highest, you know, running for the highest office in the land. And he's sending the message out to all of America that the press is bad, and I'm going to dominate them like I dominate everything else.
That is the message, of course, that he wants to be sending out. I mean, in his own mind, he's got it all figured out. Look, he reads the polls. Press isn't popular. So what he's doing is standing on the shoulders and scapegoating the press, which we have come to see him do in a lot of other things. And this is a guy who understands that because the press isn't popular, there are a lot of people who feel that they've suffered at the hands of the press. You just came, Judy, from a Rotary meeting. I remember talking to a service organization, I won't name them here, and it was years ago, about why Mario Cuomo was so mean to the press. You know, and I said, well, let me ask you a question. How many of you, you're all movers and shakers in the room, how many of you have had any interaction with the press this year? And everybody held up their hands. I said, now put your hand down if the reporter got it right. And no hands went down. Yeah. So people are angry at the press, either correctly or not correctly, and that's their perception. And Trump is popularizing that and getting ahead on the basis of
well,
it.
Well, you're right, that Judy, that this has been going on for years. The press has never been very popular, Alan. We've always had the same problems that you're alluding to. But I blame Megyn Kelly for this. She went one-on-one with Trump, and by that I mean she did her job and asked hard questions, and he cut her out, and then she goes crawling back to him so that she could do that primetime, mealy-mouthed, mewling little interview with him. And now he's trying it with the Washington Post. Why would he not? He won the first time. Why would he not try round two?
And the question, Rosemary, of course, and Judy, is who he won with. Look, he is appealing to a particular demographic in order to get elected. I would call them the silent majority, or the moral, in quotes, not very, but moral majority. The people who don't talk much, but who voted in Republican primaries in huge numbers, including a lot of crossover Democrats and other people. And so he knows who he's appealing to. He doesn't care about, I'm sorry, Rosemary, the head of the press department that, or the media department.
Head of the department at UAlbany. He also doesn't care about any of the other usual institutions that have a hand in elections. Today, we have a story that he's told the Republican establishment, which was unhappy with his reaction to the judge and to Orlando. He told them to just go to hell, that you have to get tougher. So he's winning. He's using the strategy that helped him to win in the primaries, which is go it alone and say, all the rest of the establishment has it wrong, listen to me.
On the other hand, he's got a 70% disapproval rating in the United States right now. And that is growing. So the fact that it is growing may indicate that he's in electoral trouble, or it may not. It may be a bunch of people who we never hear from elections who are going to hear from them.
You know, when you asked that question in that room and no one put their hand down that the reporter had gotten it right, it's ironic because Donald Trump gets so many things wrong.
He's the most dishonest of all politicians in this whole cycle, including all the, 17 Republican candidates.
When we say dishonest, what do you mean?
He tells things that are not just wrong, but way wrong. And he knows they're wrong. He's been corrected, and he just says it again.
And so when I was at the Rotary meeting today, one of the questions they did ask is, how do you make sure what you're printing in the newspaper or online is correct? And I talked about the ways we work to vet sources and to make sure the people who are telling us information know what they're talking about. And it's difficult. It's not always correct. There was some discussion about NPR putting a disclaimer at the bottom of their Orlando shooting story saying, not all this information may be correct. It may turn out that not everything we're reporting is correct. And that's the way it is. I mean, that things change.
And they have, by the way, in the Orlando shooting. We're learning all kinds of things about this guy that we never suspected. In the beginning, did he have terrorist roots? He had called up and he had said this is for ISIS. But it turns out that there were many psychological complexities with him, including the fact that he had been spending a lot of time at this gay club, which may have meant to a lot of people that he has his own profile may have been gay.
Well, and the disclaimer on CNN, that was a nice segue into another interesting topic, would not have been needed in the old days. We would not have tried to present the story until days of reporting had gone into it. That luxury has disappeared. We have news 24/7. And that means you are reporting as you are reporting, and things change. One thing looks like a lead and a possibility, and then you investigate a little more, and it's nothing. So is that reporting untruth when you present the product of your reporting before it's completed?
You know, I almost think we all have attention deficit disorder when it comes to the news. On Sunday, as this news started to break, okay, I find out, you know, how many people are dead, and I want more information. I want it right there. And if I don't get it, I turn away. And I think the cable news networks and even all traditional media on their websites, we're trying to feed the beast. And the beast wants to be fed almost nonstop. And so we speculate about what, you know, the fact that he went to the gay club could mean. It's just filling the space instead of one of the things you learn as an editor is you just have to be patient sometimes and wait for the real facts to come in.
But what if you don't have time to be patient?
Well, that's what we're saying. In today's media environment, there is never time. You don't get time. There's competing media who are not so scrupulous as you. They're putting out any kind of rumor they get. Part of your job is to squelch those rumors, but you're also trying to find what's the real story here.
Right, and sometimes you just have to wait. We don't have that confirmed. We don't know for sure that that's true. We're not going to put that out there just because everybody on Facebook is saying it or other media are covering it. We want to know for ourselves that this is true. And that is the way you build credibility. And that is the way we hope that the American public is going to continue to trust us.
Well, But the problem with that, obviously, is you're going to get beat by the competition who, especially with the tabloids, are going to make it up.
But NPR, especially CNN, also are getting kudos on this latest round.
Kudos from whom?
the public and from critics and from ethicists about how they are constantly reminding people this is only what we know right now. And that could change. That did not happen with the Boston Marathon, where all kinds of very damaging personal material was put on the air before it was vetted. Reputations were ruined by that. Do you remember the,
the
young man, several young men, and who were, right, their photograph made them suspects, but they were pronounced guilty on CNN, and they brought a lawsuit afterward. We're not seeing that quite so much this time.
Richard Jewell in Atlanta, same thing, right?
That one I always thought as a different case. Do you remember
why
this
that?
One? This
was
the 1996 Olympics. A
wow,
bomb went off.
Very good memory.
Yeah, I remember this case. 1996, a bomb went off.
I want credit for having brought it up.
He was a security guard, Richard Jewell, and he quickly, he was at first a hero and then very quickly became a suspect, and the press reported that. To me, that was always not so bad as what's happening now, because he was targeted by the FBI and the local police. They raided his house. They surrounded his mother's house and his and took out material. He was clearly a suspect.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he was a suspect, but they were wrong.
Right.
And in fact, he sued and won.
No, he didn't. He didn't actually win. It was a very murky case. To us in the media, that's the caution. We were wrong about Jewell because we followed the officials. So what else do we do? It goes back to what Judy was saying. How do you check out whether information you have is completely accurate?
Okay, so just so our listeners will bear with us, we seem to have different memories. It was quite a while ago. It's forgivable. But I think he won his law case.
That aside, the issue of whether or not you report that someone's a suspect, or even nowadays they use the terms person of interest.
Right.
And so that casts all sorts of aspersions on someone.
Absolutely.
When they actually haven't officially been charged. We, on the local level, very cautious about using the term that so-and-so is a suspect, because it doesn't mean anything. If the authorities have a solid case, charge him. Don't tell me he's a suspect or she.
Right. It was like using the press to find out information that the police with subpoena power did not have.
Right, to put the squeeze on someone to talk.
And Jewell was absolutely innocent. Let's make that clear. A terrorist, another man, confessed to it soon afterward.
Well, right. And therefore, somebody whose reputation is ruined because of newspapers and others like NBC maybe or some of the others have to, you know, take the brunt of that and perhaps pay damages.
But I agree with Rosemary that they were basing that on police sources.
On really good information.
There were
Well,
really good information, which happened to be bad.
Right, the final
You know
confusion.
What I don't like about you two? You guys are goo-goos. Goo-goos are what we call in the profession good government people. You know, they do the right thing. They've
Does
groups.
That mean you're a bad government person?
No, I'm much more of a rough and tumble person. But you always say what you would tell your students in a class, you see, as opposed to the way it is. I used to have a student named Vinny, and Vinny used to ask one question to all the politicians. So tell us, what way is it? I mean, what's the way it really works? You're glaring at me, Rosemary.
No, I'm not. I wish I had my computer here to check out the
me
Jewell
too.
Case.
Me too. I looked for mine.
He did win to a certain level, but it never went through all of the appeals. Let us go back to Orlando, clearly the story of the week. The Orlando Sentinel, the local newspaper, has been decimated by layoffs. It has lost two-thirds of its staff, although it remains the largest news organization in the area. They covered this with a much reduced staff, and we know something about reduced staff all over the news media. How have they done? How do you rate their performance?
That was the source I went to first thing Sunday morning. I knew that they would be on the ground, that they would have the basics, and they did. They rallied the troops. I mean, that's something that any media organization does really well. We respond to disasters. Everybody comes together, works, you know, crazy hours. People really rally and they can produce things quickly. They had a plan in place and they had some basic skills up to snuff. They were able to produce the videos they needed to produce, and they got some help from their family newspapers in terms of developing a website that would post all the information as it came through. But if you pay attention to how they did it, they were all working amazing. You know, they were basically working around the clock.
They did not sleep. No.
It's not sustainable in terms of covering news on a daily basis. But when it comes to a big event, I mean, they had the shooting of the young singer from The Voice on Friday night that they had to cover. And then just remember, they also have this incredibly horrible story about the alligator attacking the 2-year-old at Disney World the following day.
To me, the worst story of the year. Now, I have a 2-year-old grandson, and the idea that this kid could go wading in a pool and get, well, it did make the front page of the tabloids, knocking everything else off.
Because
it gets very close to all our worst fears.
In a journalism story, in any article, you look for the universal value. And here it is, fear, a monster rising from the depth, loss of your child. It just doesn't get. It's a sensational story in itself.
I wonder how many.
At Disney World, right.
In the best hotel in Disney World, right. Or at least that's my understanding. So that's an incredible story. So you get the complexity. You're right, Rosemary. You get the complexity of, you know, the Trump stories and this and who's right and who's wrong. And then you get this horrible story. And the tabs all put a picture of an alligator with his mouth open, you know, with a little boy on the front. That's something that everybody can understand.
Yeah. Hey, the presidential candidates have not yet weighed in on that story, as far as I know.
I think Disney lawyers are working overtime on that story. The story has now switched to liability and prevention.
One can just wonder whether the reservations of people at Disney World and at the hotel, they're working overtime too, I bet.
Yeah, there were no signs around the little lagoon where this happened about alligators. So who's responsible?
If I was going to bring my young family to Disney World right now or to that hotel, I think I'd cancel.
Yeah, I don't know. Or to Orlando in general seems to be under a horrible cloud this past week. So anyway, at a time when Trump is calling the media dishonest and crooked and other terrible names, you see the need for the media in a place like Orlando, where the newspaper people, unfortunately, are working overtime to try to get out information.
Well, I loved what Judy had to say because, you know, as I was sitting here thinking about how they mobilized that Orlando reduced crew and what a good job they did, one wonders, well, how come? Do you really need all those reporters? Couldn't they all do this every day? But Judy explained that no, it's the adrenaline that gets you going.
All right, let's move again, an offshoot of Orlando, and that's covering the debate, the ongoing debate over gun control, gun violence. Is the media, has it done a good job in the past? Has that changed since Sandy Hook and now Orlando? Do journalists even know enough about weaponry? I don't know much about various guns and weapons, and that so annoys Second Amendment enthusiasts who know everything about the weapons. They just discount us immediately on the basis of inaccuracy.
Well, I love the front page of the Daily News virtually every day. And Daily News has become my favorite newspaper. It used to be my most hated because that was a different story. There was a folk song in the old days, so it must be true. I learned it in the Daily News. However, you know, their front page is now an editorial every day. Thank you, National Rifle Association, NRA, after the great tragedy in Orlando. So I just think they're right about what they've been writing, and they're insistent that the moribund political apparatus does nothing. I'm a big fan.
You know, it's such a contentious issue that whenever we write anything about it, whenever we cover it, you will get a tremendous response. So it's something our audience really cares about. And it is something that you don't want to wade too deeply in. You don't want to offend sides. But we talked this week about maybe sending a reporter out to a gun range and shooting some guns to see what it was really like. Yeah. Every newsroom has people who hunt. Well, I say this. In upstate New York, I would imagine every newsroom has people who have guns, who are hunters, who have some familiarity with the guns. But, you know, talking to people who really care about having an assault rifle in their arsenal, that's important to them, asking them why, and getting those kinds of stories out is something a local newspaper can do. And then you have these opinion pieces on your op-ed pages is the other thing you can do, but it remains a polarizing issue, and it's very difficult.
I am seeing some slight shift after this latest outrage. And that's, you heard Donald Trump and even the NRA are saying, okay, maybe we can do something. And it's whether people who are listed on the no-fly list or the terror list should be allowed to buy guns. And Donald Trump has indicated he's going to talk to the NRA today. We've not had this before. And the NRA said, well, we don't think terrorists should have guns. We just disagree about whether if you're on the list, you're actually a terrorist. You haven't had due process. But they say, we would be in favor of a bill that said if you're on the list and you try to buy a gun, the FBI would have a certain amount of time to come and vet it. That's new. That's movement. And I'm not sure if, how does the media deal with that? We should be fanning that, I think, as good news. Yeah, let's get something
well,
going.
Well, it's being fanned. I mean, I'm sure there's editorializing. I don't know that people go to the editorial page daily to figure out what the newspaper is saying, unless, like the Daily News, it's on the front page of the paper every day, their editorial position. I just think that, you know, we watch things like in New York State where, you know, this program is produced. They finally come up with an idea that the way that they're going to change the long decrepit ethics laws is they're going to do one little thing, and that's going to say, okay, if, just a real analogy to what you've been talking about, Rosemary, with the guns, if you've stolen and you've been convicted and you're going to jail, you lose your pension. Big deal. As opposed to all the things that should be done, like outside income should be limited. No, they're going to just do this one little thing that is glaring and hits you in the face.
It is a tactic. This no-fly, no-buy, as they're calling it, proposal it is indeed some movement towards greater gun control. But
tiny.
But I will be interested to see the reaction from the hinterlands. I mean, when we drive around here in upstate New York, where New York passed this SAFE Act, I still see plenty of lawn signs with the SAFE Act red, you know, marked through it. SAFE Act.
Ma'am.
I mean, it's still incredibly strong issue.
At Home Depot yesterday, there was a car with a giant poster plastered on the window, probably a safety violation, and it had Andrew Cuomo's face saying, you know, I hate the Second Amendment. It was pretty inflammatory. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Andrew Cuomo made his bet on this. I happen to agree with him. He really has gone to the wall after Sandy Hook. He took all of the momentum. He shoved it down the Republicans' throats. They had to vote for it. And I think it's one of the better things that he's done. I think he's done plenty of bad things.
And there are plenty of people, your listeners, who disagree with that. So to me, the interesting thing is, how does the media, which really does have a view overall, right? How do we cover this fairly? At the very least, it seems to me that we need to know guns, and we don't. It's like trying to write about the military and not knowing what kind of ranks are in the military or what kind of equipment they fly in and sail in. If that's your specialty, you need to know it. And I don't think the media gets very high marks on that.
Well,
if you look at the debate on automatic weapons are banned in the country. It's semi-automatic. What's a semi-automatic weapon? Is there a difference between a shotgun or a hunting gun and the weapon that Omar used in Pulse? Is there?
I think a gun is a gun is a gun is a gun. And I know this country has a gun culture. So you may be right, Rosemary. Maybe we should know more, although I've seen lots of articles in which the papers show the guns, show what their capacities are. But to me, we are a gun culture, and that's the important thing. And I'm not going to hide behind the fact that somebody doesn't know how many bullets are in one of these guns.
Well, but not all guns are created equal, and I think every day when you write a story and it involves a gun, it's important to say what kind of it is. If it's a shotgun, it inflicted a different kind of damage than a pistol did, and so let's get as precise as we can. That's part of our job as reporters, to give people as much information as precisely as we can. Even the gun used in the Orlando shootings was initially identified as one kind of gun, but it was later identified as something a little bit different.
Right. Even the idea that gun does have some value to legitimate gun users, to hunters, we did not make that clear, because we have this idea that all guns are bad.
I think all guns are bad, yes.
That's the view overall. We are running out of time. Should we mention briefly that Gawker Media has filed for bankruptcy soon after being hit with a huge lawsuit brought by Hulk Hogan? Are we sad about this?
Well, not only Hulk Hogan, but he had somebody with something to say about newspapers in general financing his lawsuit.
Yes. Yeah, a backer.
So, yeah, which we've talked about here. To me, I'm not sad about it at all. I'm not saying it at all. You know, if these organizations are going to test the waters and push the line and defame people, no, I think they deserve what they get.
No, but it's a shrewd business move, because it will mean they will be able to survive. I mean, this is
tactic.
Nothing is going to happen to Gawker. They will continue to function as they have in the past. People will not lose jobs. It's just a high-stakes power game they're playing.
I say shame on them.
That will be the final word. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Judy Patrick. We'll see you next week on The Media Project.
Funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.